You're listening to the Camp Nation podcast. Find us online at campnation.ca.
Welcome to the Camp Nation podcast number 14, the one with Koinonia in a tree with a drum. Today's episode features our discussion on staff commitment. Good day and welcome to Camp Nation 14 for the first week of July 2010. My name is Travis Allison and I'm the social media manager at Our Kids Media, and I was a camp director for 15 years at Glenmore Camp in Cairn in Muskoka, Ontario.
My name is Adam Isidore. I'm a second generation camping professional. I grew up attending summer camps throughout my childhood. I have worked at day camp overnight and performing arts camps. I currently live outside of New York City, and I have a company called Path to Rhythm that combines my passion for drumming, performing, and teaching with my love for summer camp.
I'm Beth Allison, and I, too, was a camp director for 15 years at Glenmore and Cairn in Muskoka, and I'm now doing some camp consulting work.
And my name is Joe Richards. I'm the executive director at Pierce Williams Christian Center, which is the United Church of Canada summer camp located just outside of London, Ontario.
Awesome. Welcome, everybody. So I want to say a special welcome to Adam and Beth, both of whom have had their own parts in previous podcasts. And maybe Beth appreciates the chance to speak for herself for a change. Beth is, I hope, obviously my wife and the woman with whom I was director at a camp for so long. So welcome to both of you.
Thanks.
Thanks, Travis. Great to be here.
It's great to have you both. And Adam has contributed lots of interviews and things to the podcast, so it's nice to have him part of the main discussion as well. I'm going to start off today with our links. So our links are a bit of news about the camping and recreation industry. And Joe, you had something pretty cool.
Yeah, I did. If you're an OCA-accredited camp, an Ontario Camping Association-accredited camp, you get the Canadian Camping Association newsletter if you sign up for it. And the last one that came out, they put up a post about the We Are Camp campaign, which is a United Church of Canada's camping initiative to really stress how many people come through camp and are formed at camp, especially within the church. It's a very large number when you ask people to raise their hand, you know, who attended camp when they were younger, who had a leadership role at camp. The We Are Camp campaign came out of an I Am Camp postcard campaign, which started on my desk a couple of years ago. And we had every United Church camper across Canada last year send postcards into the National Secretary for the United Church with a, you know, this is why I love camp. And they would describe it in one word. And it was like a mass postcard campaign to sort of get that feel of all those Santa Claus letters in Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. That was the end goal. So
that's awesome. And so there's the church put out something that the CCA picked up.
Yeah, the We Are Camp campaign is a package that helps camps relate better with their communities and with their local churches. And it also helps churches relate better with their camps. And it gives tools to do that both ways, both to the church and to the camp and to the community. So it's a great package that probably has a lot of usefulness outside of the United Church as well. So
It sounds great. Is there, I haven't checked the link that you put in the notes here, Joe. Does that go to the CCA or to the We Are Camp website?
It goes to the CCA article. The United Church has set up a Ning community that is called We Are Camp. And there is a website called iamcamp.org, but it just redirects to the Ning community. And there's links on there as to where to buy the package. And the workbook and things like that. So that's where the links go on the show notes.
Cool. That's great. Well, congratulations on that. It's I read the article. It looks like an awesome program, and definitely check out the Ning site too. Do you know how much the packages are to buy?
They are $16.95, which is fairly reasonably priced, and they ship directly from the United Church Resource Center.
That's great. Thank you. It's a nice bit of news, I think. It was a great, really poignant cartoon that I found, and it is a strip that's in the SF Gate newsletter, and another woman wrote about it on a website that I read called Campfire Stories for Parents, by Marla Coleman, and she had written a great article called Kidsick or Homesick or Kidsick. And the premise of her article was really that it was about parents letting go and about parents letting kids come to camp. And sort of, it's a discussion we have around our office quite often because we're trying to encourage parents to send their kids to camp, and running into a lot of parents who sometimes say, my kid's not ready. And I mean, it's the same thing you notice as a camp director. You wonder if it's the kid who's not ready or the parent who's not ready. So Marla had written this article about the catch-22 of online summer camp photos. And I was hoping Dan was here. Dan's told us a story on the podcast before about a mom who called him wondering why that staff member was yelling at her son. And when Dan investigated, it was just sort of a weird photo that the counselor was hot in the dining hall and sweaty and red and talking very animatedly. And the photographer took a picture and they posted it online. The mom was so upset that this kid was getting yelled at and treated poorly. This cartoon talks about that exactly. The cartoon strip is called Edge City by Terry and Patty LeBan. And it was about the mom calling into the camp and saying, I haven't seen pictures of my kid on the website. I need to see pictures. And the kid just makes a grumpy face about it. And then the mom says, oh my gosh, the kid looks miserable. And it was awesome because it fit Dan's story so well.
Yeah, that was a funny story. I heard that on the last podcast. It was great to hear how Dan handled it as well.
Yeah, Dan did really well with it and went to the staff member first just to find out what was going on, which I think is, you know, good idea in the first place, to go straight to the source and find out what's really happening. He didn't yell at the counselor or assume that the counselor had done wrong. He just asked questions and then talked to the kid, and the kid's like, no, this is just us at lunch. He was just telling stories. That was good. It was funny that the cartoon fit it so exactly.
There was I just read an article today that came out in my Google Alerts from the Christian Science Monitor called Summer Camp Sunset for an American Tradition. And it had a similar story to Dan's in it about a camp director who parents really judge those pictures. And so, yeah, that's a great cartoon.
So that story, Joe, was parents getting a bad impression because of the online photos?
Well, the story itself was about the concept that is summer camp dying? It's not a new article or concept in an article, but in this they related to a story that there was, you know, neurotic parents who want a picture after 48 hours minimum, and then new pictures every day. They want to see their kids. So it was an interesting take on what they think, where they think summer camp is going. So,
Adam, you get to see lots of different camps. Do you think that the majority of them are posting pictures regularly, or are they sort of saving it up?
I really think it depends on the camp. I feel like the ones that have really embraced social media and are incorporating that into their marketing are definitely more conscious of posting pictures and encouraging that interaction with parents. And then I find that some of the more traditional camps who have had their same families and that long tradition of the same families coming are not as concerned and don't post as many pictures.
Cool. So, Joe, that Sunset for an American Tradition is a different article than the one you posted before, the Is Summer Camp Dying article that you posted on your Twitter?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. It's totally different.
But yet somehow.
Exactly. And I have this one scheduled to go out tonight at 9:30. Sometimes I just schedule a tweet to go out much later, so it actually looks like I'm doing something in the world.
Hey, you fooled me, Joe. I couldn't believe how accurate you were with your tweeting.
Joe's hard at work. I'm going to drop in the Is Summer Camp Dying one into the show notes for people who want to read it, so you get two articles that both suggest that maybe this is the end of the traditional residential camp. I obviously haven't read the one you just talked about, Joe, but I read the first one that you posted on Twitter last week. So I'd asked Beth before if she had any links, but Adam, do you have any sort of news links? If you don't, that's no problem. We'll just move on to our discussion.
I do not have any news links to offer today.
No worries. We often don't ask our guests, so I thought I'd just give you a chance if you had something to start up. So
thank you. I do have a pick of the week for later.
Good. I like your pick of the week very much. I took a look at it.
All right.
That means that we will move on to our discussion, and really wanted to set aside some time to talk about a topic that, in fact, Beth had suggested to me over the weekend, and I really like the idea. So I just wanted to put it out there. We want to talk about how you get staff to be, well, on the same page as you, meaning that staff have an understanding of what the camp's philosophy is and want to be there for the right reasons, and you know what you can do to get them to that point. And Joe, I wonder if you could tell us a bit what you do at Pierce Williams.
At Pierce Williams, this is something that plays a huge role in every aspect of staffing camp and training staff and what we share with parents. So over time here, we've gotten the staff to really understand and buy into the one-line job description. And years ago, I read a Fast Company article about a factory in Sweden or one of the Norwegian countries that essentially had a one-line job description for everyone, which was to do what needs to be done. And at the time I read it, I thought that's perfect. That's exactly what every camp needs, is that's the job description. And so for us, we put that as the first line in everyone's job description, to do what needs to be done, to show the summer campers an amazing summer camp experience. And we really promote that and get staff to buy into that. And when I first arrived, there were a variety of staff who just didn't get it, and then they didn't get a job. So it was a fairly simple step. They would be invited to leave, or they would make a choice where they would have to go. And we talk about that with our staff, getting them all on the same page, knowing why we're here, and knowing that the staff, everyone's depending on them. The other thing we talk about is that by the time you get to sit across from my desk, I don't make choices to fire people. The person on the other side of the desk has made all the choices to get to this point in their life. And so by the time they're sitting across from me, it's because of choices they've made. And that makes it really easy with our staff to, even if it's a friend who's made a choice to be fired, that they put the blame on the friend. They're like, well, they just made the poor choices. And so if we get staff to buying into the simple job description to do what needs to be done, and the fact that everyone's very responsible for their own actions, and that our end goal is just to have kids leaving, having had a great time at camp and wanting to come back, then the group itself will police itself and will police other staff members to make sure that they're all on board with that. I think that answers the question.
Well, yeah. Is there something you do, Joe, to get them to that point? Like, to get them to the clear understanding? Is there something creative or experiential that you do to get them there?
I just drill it into them. No, I'm just teasing.
I love experiential learning.
Take this experiential stuff. You will. No. There is. And this relates way back to years ago. I had a... I'm sure at some point Travis has heard this story for sure, but there's summer of 1996, I got hired at a small private non-for-profit, meaning that there's no organization that supported it. It was simply supported by its own request for money. So there's no parent organization. And I got hired that summer, and I said, this is awesome. This is great. I said, so how many returning staff? And the chair of the board looked at me and said, one. And I was like, how many did you have? 33. I was like, oh, okay. What's the program like? And she looks at me and she says, whatever you want it to be. I was like, oh,
wow.
Okay. Which for like a 23 year old just finishing university is like the ultimate playground. You know, here's your budget. Hire who you want to hire. Set the program up however you want to set it up. There's no history in place. There's no tradition in place. There's none of that. And you're running a camp for kids who pay $15 to go to camp for 13 days. Not $15 a day, $15 for 13 days. So $1.02 a day. And then she said, oh, yeah, and the board's totally new as well. So they don't have any past history. And it was a really grand experiment, and I had not had the opportunity to hire all of my own staff. There was an administrator who sort of had who was full-time year-round at 20 hours a week, but purely an administrator in the sense that they didn't have anything to do with the program. And so she said she had done a lot of hiring before I came on board, and I had the worst summer of my summer camp career.
Mm-hmm.
I had 20 counselors, and I fired 11 over the course of the summer. The first week of camp comes, and I have 96 kids show up on a bus. At the end of 13 days, 60 kids went home on the bus. In 13 days, I'd sent home 36 kids because it was like this huge wake-up call. And Marg, who was the administrator at the time, is a great lady. And we sat in the office at the end of that after kids left, and we're just like, what have we gotten ourselves into? The campers themselves were low income or no income parents, right? On welfare. The $15 was just to make sure they would show up at the bus.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, the staff didn't get it. And at that time, as a young camp director, I realized that they didn't get it because I didn't tell them everything that I needed to tell them. And they're probably not the same people I would have chosen had I done my own hiring. And that summer was really my wake-up call on how to get all the staff on the same page. Because you can imagine that, you know, hiring, 11 new counselors over the course of the summer, I would just bring new people in. Like, it mm-hmm. was a ridiculous turnover. And I called in a lot of favors from friends. A good friend of mine, Pat, I called in a favor from Pat. And 2 days before the end of camp, I had two counselors get in a fistfight in front of their two cabins. And I had to fire the one guy.
Yeah.
The one guy. Because I could only afford to fire the one guy. And I called Pat and I said, Pat, I need you for 2 days. And Pat says, okay. And he comes out. And Pat's a bit older. And he, in 2 days, he had this really rough camper in their cabin. And this is the whole summer in this story. So Pat really thinks he's connected with this kid. Pat's like, oh man, I totally had a breakthrough with him in 2 days. He's a rough kid, but he's telling me this as we're waving goodbye mm-hmm. to the buses, as the buses are driving out. And the kid looks out the window and Pat and I are waving. And then the kid just flashes us a finger with this look on his face. And I was like, yep, you reached him, all right. and then they went on their way. Now, the following summer, to jump ahead, I stayed at the camp. I stayed there, and I was in on all the hiring for our camp staff. And I totally redesigned our camp training program. Summer staff training is an art and a science. It's both. And if you have a small staff like that, you can affect huge change in a small time period. To get them all on board, all on side. I still hired about 35 staff that year, and out of all of the staff who came to camp in the second year, I had one person quit because he thought he let the team down. And the change there was that is where I introduced a ton of community building, teamwork, team play, experiential learning, puzzles, games, whatever, to get them to understand that they had to work together, to get them to solve problems, get them to think for themselves. And I've just, over 15 years, I've really refined that. We now call that staff construction at camp. And we hold around 2 staff construction sessions every day during all of our training.
Mm-hmm.
And staff construction, because we're building a team. And so that's where the name staff construction came from. And every year we build a stronger and stronger team, which makes it harder for staff construction because they've all seen the activities I did last year or the year before, because now I'm having this returning staff coming back. And so it challenges me to go out and find new activities or make up new activities. And I think that's really the strongest point for our staff training.
Cool. Thank you. Beth, you had some ideas of specific training stuff to do.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think as camp people, we all know that good leaders really make people feel that they're at the very heart of things. And I think that's what Joe was just talking about. Everybody feels that he or she really makes a difference to the success of the mission that you have for the summer. And when that happens, people feel really centered and it gives their work meaning. So for me, I can't stress enough the importance of front loading. Something I learned as a camp director and got better at the more I did that, to make my expectations really clear, to work with the staff to be really intentional about activities, actions, words, and never assume that anyone is on the same page as you are with what you hope to gain from the experience, but always to help to create that foundation to make everybody feel welcome and safe and on the same page. So the community that Joe was talking about building is really intentional. So whatever your mission statement, whatever your beliefs are about camping, everything should follow right through from hiring to staff training and beyond. So, for example, if you find that it's really important to make your campers feel welcome and that they have a safe place and that they really belong when they come to summer camp, then you need to do that with your staff. So at leadership training, you're doing everything to make them feel safe and welcome, from welcome signs to welcome mats at the cabin doors to welcome letters on their pillows to greeting them personally to carrying their luggage and so on. And so, like Joe, every year it was a challenge to come up with new ways to sort of provide that same atmosphere and to really get them to understand the importance of summer camp for us and why we did what we did. So last year, I just have a bit of an example of something we started, and it was a really amazing experience for us, and we were really pleased at how it worked. And on our way back from Tri-State last year, we had a very long drive in the car, about 12 hours, and one of the things we talked about were our serious concerns about the changes in the world today that were encroaching upon our world of summer camp, or that sanctuary as we saw it, and how we could protect that world. That things like technology were all wonderful and good and had their place, but trying to keep texting and, you know, iPods and all that out of camp for us was really important, and to be able to allow the imagination to grow and creativity to grow without those kinds of things was something that we really, really wanted to focus on. So we visited our reasons for summer camp, and we realized that our purpose was really to help campers and staff build and create and sustain healthy relationships that didn't necessarily include text messaging and video games and all of that. And we worked really hard to present the idea that camp was the extraordinary world, and that we differ from the mundane world, and that that is what made summer camp so special. So we had a weekend that we hold in May, which was a staff orientation weekend prior to the leadership training time in June. And we discussed this idea with our staff. We ran a lot of sessions on how camp could be that magical place and provide opportunities for kids and teens to find their imaginations and their creative side. But we decided that instead of just doing those kinds of sessions during the day, we had to create something really special. So we woke our staff up in the middle of the night. And we woke our resource staff up early. We had them prepare the dining hall setup with benches in a circular fashion, and there were candles, and they prepared warm bread and hot chocolate. And we had other members of our senior staff wake up our counselors. We'd scripted it so that it would be really gentle and not scary in the middle of the night, and people wouldn't worry what was wrong. We had them brought cabin by cabin into the lodge by lantern light, and it just so happened that the stars and moon cooperated beautifully that night. We brought them into the lodge, and we had a special ceremony that included readings from us, from alumni who had come to cook for us that weekend. We had music and an initiation ceremony that marked them as part of the hero's world and no longer part of the mundane. And we just used charcoal that we marked an X on their hands. And at the end, we invited them to join us in this adventure, understanding it wouldn't always be easy and there would always be a great responsibility that would go with it. And from nowhere, a great arch was produced for them to walk through. And when they were ready to do so, there was guitar music softly playing in the background. And they took it really seriously, and some of them sat for quite a period of time before they left. You could tell that they were really thinking about what it meant. And again, at the very end, they were escorted back by resource staff, who were again scripted with what to say to make sure that we hadn't overlooked any details. So they were, you know, wish them wonderful dreams and sleep tight and let them know that the wake-up bell would go an hour later, because we did have them up in the middle of the night. But this time on their way back, we had candles, hundreds of them, in paper bags with sand that lit the pathways back to all the cabins. And it looked really magical and extraordinary. And some senior staff had snuck out near the end to sort of light all those. So it really was something almost ethereal. And the next morning, I had a couple staff come up to me and say, did that really happen? Because it seemed kind of like a dream. And for me, I thought, yes, that's exactly what it was we were going for. So throughout the summer, you know, if I was walking by a cabin group that was doing something extraordinary, I would just sort of make that mark of the X on my hand to that staff member, give them a little grin, and they would know that I knew they were doing something extraordinary. And they still talk about it to this day, about camp being the extraordinary world and how their job, too, is to take it back to the mundane world and to do extraordinary things there, too. So it was a really neat way to sort of get that message across to them, and one that they still talk about.
And it was, what'd you call it, Beth?
It was the hero's journey.
Awesome.
Is what we talked about. So we went through steps of that in the ceremony and you know, sort of talked with them about that.
I was lucky. I was visiting camp when this weekend happened, and lucky enough to be part of the ceremony sort of from the outside. And it was pretty magical the way it all worked out. So it was great. Really awesome feeling, I think, that they left that night with.
Yeah, it sounds beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just easier, like the next morning, all the lessons we'd been talking about during the day before, you know, it was like they'd absorbed them and so on. But the next morning, it was like a switch had flipped, and all of a sudden they got it. And it really allowed them to give themselves and each other permission to do those extraordinary things. And so it was just a whole different day the next day, and everybody had jumped on board. So it was kind of a neat way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Now, Adam, you grew up at camp, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So you've seen it sort of from a child and on. What sort of things have you seen, whether it was your parents' camp or others that you've been to, that people did to get staff on board with the important mission of camp?
Well, one thing that I've been observing lately, and Beth and Joe kind of touched on this, is just that importance of the initial communication and the clarity in the communication for the camp director. So that in some of the workshops that I'll do, I make the analogy from the drumming circle, which I bring the experience of musicians when they're playing and improvising together. Listening and responding is crucial when they're playing improvised music. So I encourage camp directors to really step fully into their power with clear communication. And to be able to, an example of that would be able to speak in I statements. So not give away their power so that they're really being clear in the communication. So an example of that would be they're saying to a staff member, it would be nice for you to make sure your cabin's on time mm-hmm. to breakfast. To me, that's not very clear mm-hmm. if I was that counselor to phrase it as an I statement. I want you to be on time with your cabin to breakfast tomorrow morning. And little nuances like that can go a long way in just really clear communication and expectation. And then that trickles down all the way through to staff. So right there is just an important piece, like Beth and Joe just mentioned, in their communication.
Great.
Well, and that's the same with all communication, right? So it's one of those things that when I sit across from someone who's new to camp at an interview, my goal is, and I say this to them, I want you to go in with eyes wide open. Like there is no, I don't want you at any point to say, hey, Joe didn't tell me this, or I had no idea about this. And the more you get into that relationship with your staff, the more you share and the more you're better with your communication, the more that they will return that favor, right? And let you know what they're doing and also know that they can speak up at camp as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're basically just setting the example once again, even in the way that you communicate and keeping that channel open.
We also tried over the years to make that message. I mean, it goes back to Joe having to sort of look for new stuff and what Beth said too, look for new stuff. So we tried to come up with creative ways of getting them to understand the metaphor of camp and how it applied to not just their life as a staff person, but to the life of a camper coming to camp and how that could change them. And one thing that Beth and I did, and I'll get Beth to talk about it in a bit more detail, is we did an exercise in the May weekend, so the first real full day of training for our staff that we called Koinonia, which is a Greek word for community. And we had staff talk about all the different elements of community and sort of made a metaphor about that and then applied it back into camp. Beth, can you talk a bit about Koinonia?
We got them into groups. We had a staff of about 60. So put them into groups of 4 to 6 people. And this is where all of our recycling came in handy. So if you're going to do this, make sure you do it and grab your stuff before recycling goes out. We used a lot of cardboard boxes, you know, whatever recyclables we could find. And then we used construction paper, glue, paint, toilet paper rolls, cereal boxes, whatever. Made sure everybody had a lot of markers and masking tape and duct tape. And we gave each group about 30 minutes to create a building, a 3D building, as part of a town. And for us, we asked that the buildings be about a foot to a foot and a half high. And we gave each group a specific town building. So, for example, you know, one group got the library, one group got the school, one group got the rec center, the church, the cemetery, the hospital, and so on. And we gave them time to create these things together, which was great in and of itself, allowed them to be artistic and crafty, and get to know each other better. So this was on the very first day of training for us, and allowed them to share their ideas. But at the same time, we asked them to really think about the boundaries that they themselves wanted to create for their group. We put on music in the background, so it was fun and kind of light for a while. And we asked them to think how their building could be used metaphorically to describe the community that they wanted to create together and the behaviors that they wanted to see govern the community that we were building together that summer. So they built this town, which in essence represented the covenant that they wished to build together as a family. How they would treat each other, how they would participate each day, how they'd be responsible to one another, and so on. After about 10 or 15 minutes, we went around and helped to remind them to discuss those questions while they were working, because they do get a bit carried away. And we did give them question sheets that kind of helped them think about those sorts of questions. And after each group was finished, we put the town together on the floor. So it was a really, really large visual, which was really neat. And we all sat outside it. Each group was given a chance to sort of show off their work and explain how they would like those issues dealt with in our community. And sometimes we needed to help them find the words to express them well, but most of the time they did really well on their own. And then a road of paper was placed throughout the town. We just used banner paper for that. And on the road, we had each group sort of fill in sentences that were, "we believe in." They filled that in. And those became our guiding principles, and they were what connected all the structures in the community. So, for example, you know, somebody might have said, "we believe in treating everyone with respect." And then we took a photograph of the town. We hung it in the staff lounge, but we also kept the buildings. And it was really neat to bring one building down, maybe at a staff meeting, to talk about problems that had arisen within the community throughout the summer. We bring that corresponding building out and ask the group to remind itself what rules it chose to eliminate that kind of negative behavior. And it just was a really neat way to talk about those kinds of things. I'll give you an example. We asked a group to do a library, so they came up with how they will be able to share ideas with one another, how they will be able to borrow resources from other people, how important it was to find a quiet place each day to think and learn, those kinds of things. So it was just a really neat visual. It took a couple of hours to do, but the points really hit home.
Yeah, I think using the metaphor made it much more personal in lots of ways than presenting it fairly straight up.
And it was also things that they themselves had decided and created together. So I hate to use the word buy-in, but there was a lot easier buy-in because they were belief statements that they themselves created.
Right. Adam or Joe, do you have any other examples of maybe one each if you have them, other examples of cool activities that people could run to get their people together?
I obviously work in drumming programs, and I love the analogy of community with drumming. So similar to some of the ideas that Beth said, I'll demonstrate four different instrument groups, and that consists of drums, which are hit with skins, wood, which are hit with sticks, metal sound, which is a cowbell, and I always make the joke, more cowbell,
yes,
dude, Saturday Night Live skit, and a shaker sound, which is like the egg shakers, anything that shakes. And I'll demonstrate how each of these voices on their own are nice, but when the group plays them together, they really all add their own voice. And I'll make the analogy to how that represents community, and then I'll also make the analogy of how summer camp is a community, with the different age campers, the staff, the administration, and how it all works together. So that's one of the reasons why I love drumming at summer camp. Many ways that it can be used. So that's how I use it, as more of a community building activity.
Great. That's awesome. I love drumming too. So I'm glad that you're on here to bring that into the discussion.
And it's such a powerful activity. The sound of it, the feel of it, you know, doing it together in community is such a neat experience.
I will warn people, you need to have a good leader, a good facilitator. because if you don't, it's not as good, let's say.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so many great facilitators that are out there doing drum circle work and team building work. And you're right, Joe, that's the difference. If it is a themed activity and not just recreation, it's important to have that facilitated.
And I think the key is it's that way with everything. You know, there's a quote I read every time before I go and do a specific, you know, facilitating with a school group that's paying me a lot more money than a normal school group would. It's just a reminder that the facilitator is the most important part of the program. People will pay attention if you play with, if you can do a whole day with just sticks from the woods. If you have a good facilitator, that can happen.
That's right.
But they're the most important part of the program. So you had asked about one other example, Travis, and this is one from my time when I was a young counselor, like a first year counselor, and I've done it a couple of times since then. Liability has gone up, or it has become more noticeable, so we don't do it quite as often as I might have hoped.
Here's your legal disclaimer, Joe.
Yes, you take on this task yourself. So I grew up at a camp called Kenesari Camp, which is a United Church camp on Lake Erie. You can see the beautiful lights of Cleveland on a clear night. And a program director, who's now a family camper here with us at Pierce Williams, said that, okay, well, what we're doing today for lunch, you know, we're going to meet outside and we're going to do grace the same way we always do grace, and then we're going on a hike. And we're like, okay, great, we're going on a hike. And so we hike into the woods, and we hike up to this massive tree. It must be, like a four-foot trunk, low-hanging branches, and the tree just goes up. And he said, okay, here's your task. And this is a group of, like, 45 people. He says, we're going to have lunch in a tree. And what you have to do is you have to be close enough to someone else that they can pass you the things to make your lunch. Lunch was sandwiches. And it would have been very simple for the kitchen to just make sandwiches, right? And pack them, and then you just get handed a sandwich. Well, that sort of took away from the activity. And so the goal was that you as a staff would climb up the tree, take your own challenge on as to how high you wanted to go. And they did have one guy climb up. This is the late 80s, by the way. did I mention the legal disclaimer? Are we all good on this? They had one guy climb up and hang a rope from a high branch. And it was sort of the safety rope. It was down the middle of the tree if you needed some help. It was nowhere near some people because they chose to move out on branches. But the goal is that as a staff, you had to be close enough to be able to pass things from one person to someone else. And so it's this great analogy that you, no matter how separate you want to be from people, you have to be close enough to help them. And someone else can help you. And they pass the bread, and they pass the butter, and they passed a butter knife, right? And they passed the meat, and it was this, and it went up and down the tree, and they passed juice and dessert. And, you know, the first aider was stayed on the ground, and the camp director stayed on the ground. But honestly, that is an experience that I would never forget as a camp person. And I have, as a camp director, since 2005, well, since 1995, I've probably done that activity six times with camp staff, because it's just such a different experience. And it's a lot of that challenge by choice. Yes, I'm going to ask you to get in the tree, but if you need to be on this branch, which is 2 feet off the ground, that's great. That's awesome. And so it really depends on finding the right tree. In every camp I've been to where I've done it, it's one of those things where I go, hey, lunch in a tree would really help this group mesh well. Let's go find a tree. And sometimes I've had to hike, you know, half an hour to some other, location at camp to find the tree. But the concept of lunch in a tree is that, you know, you have to think about it. Am I close enough? can I pass something without spilling it? What happens if I drop my juice? You know, who's it going to drop on? And you would think there would be a lot of shenanigans with this type of shenanigans. What a word. I'm not sure when the last time I used that word was.
It can never be used enough. Oh.
You're an old man, too.
I am an old man. I think there wasn't a lot of horseplay from the camp staff's perspective, because I think they understood, and especially now, they understand that it's safety first and all of those things. But lunch in a tree is a great activity if you do it safely and contained. Did I mention the legal disclaimer?
Yes, thank you for reminding us.
Our kids is not held responsible for the opinions of those speaking in this podcast or the idiotic things they suggest you do with your camp staff.
It's okay, Joe. I'm still a big fan of tree climbing. And I also think it's an interesting cultural thing that parents would be more comfortable with kids climbing on a metal play structure to the same height that they would be terrified of those same kids climbing in a tree. One last chance if you have anything to add into there, but I think maybe it's time to move on to our picks of the week and start to wrap us up. Anything else anyone wants to add in?
The only reason I think of it is because I'm actually doing mine these days. But one of the things that we started many years ago at camp is still one of my favorite traditions, and one that seems to be a favorite with all the staff who return. And that takes place during leadership training, and each night at the end of campfire, we read an alumni letter. And the letter, there's quite a ceremony about it. It comes out of a special box. It only happens at a certain time in a certain place at campfire. And these are alumni that I used to ask months in advance if they would write a letter to the staff of the current year. These are people who had just finished the previous summer as their time at camp, at least for the time being anyway. And this was their chance to sort of say goodbye, but also to give words of wisdom, to really share their hopes and dreams for this staff, and to really set them up for a great summer. And these were always people, I always asked people, because they only needed 7 or 8, depending on the length of leadership training, that the staff really emulated and looked up to. And these were staff that really made a difference in the lives of these people when they were campers and staff. And so we would read one a night, and the staff would sit so closely cuddled together on the floor and of the dining hall, usually because mosquitoes are bad in June in Muskoka. And we would read the letter. They would all whisper and try to guess who it was from, because we never would tell them till the very last ending of the letter. But it was a way for somebody else that they looked up to tell them how important camp was and tell them what a great job and responsibility and privilege they had. And to sort of pass the torch. And so I'm starting to write mine, and it's a tough job, but I think it's a neat tradition to hear from staff that have gone before.
Excellent idea.
And it's worked well for almost 10 years. The outcome is often people laughing, but often also people crying at the same time, like missing those people or sort of moved by the time that they took to write the message and pass it, pay it forward. So.
And the letters are so well written. Like, people really took this seriously. They would, you know, email me and say, because I'd send them a reminder, I haven't got your letter yet. And they would say, it's so hard. It's so much harder than I thought. But they would put so much effort into that chance to be able to say that to that staff, that it was such, it's just a really, really neat experience. So when I would sit down on the campfire bench and I'd bring out the little red box and pull the lid off, you could just see them all sort of sitting up a little straighter and getting ready to hear and trying to figure out who the message was from. And sometimes it was kind of obvious because some phrase would be said that they would know. And sometimes they didn't know right till the end, but oftentimes it was quite an emotional experience, but a really positive one.
It's funny, it happened to our staff this weekend when we had the 50th anniversary service yesterday, that the previous coordinators, the previous directors, Maya Don and Murray, all stood up and were sort of sharing their story. And it was odd to watch, but it ended up that a lot of the message they were sharing was directed at my summer staff, who were sitting on a parachute in the front corner of the hall. And they really wanted to pass this message on to them. It was fascinating to watch, so...
Well, it's been a neat idea.
And I think that's a great place for us to leave off. So thank you, Joe, Beth, and Adam, for sharing your ideas. I think there's a lot that people can take from what you brought to the discussion today. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Not a problem.
Great. Our last section of the podcast is our pick of the week. And so we ask that everybody who's on come with some tool that made them a better camp director or made camp better, book, computer program, whatever. It's been lots of different things. And we keep a sort of running tally of what those things are, and I have yet to figure out a way. But we're going to, I don't know, maybe make a wiki of camp picks, but of picks of the week. I want to ask if our hosts would share theirs. So, and Adam, why don't you start? Let us know what your pick is.
I went practical, and I chose the Maglite flashlight. Yeah, it's the solid metal flashlight made by Maglite, and I bought one last summer for camp, and it was an amazing flashlight. I never realized that a flashlight could be so important in the way that it functions. And it has a adjustable beam that will go wider or narrow in and get very accurate, very small. The battery life is great. In addition, I felt very tough carrying it around. It was a great conversation piece.
Did you bring the D battery version to camp?
I had the 3D battery
version. Years ago, I had the 6D cell battery one, and I was at a camp where you could literally see all, there was a spot in the middle of the field where you could see everything at camp. And with a flashlight like that, you could literally light it up from that one spot. So if a counselor was sneaking out, you would just be like, hey, and I would turn the flashlight on and put them in a spotlight. It was like a stage show.
Yeah, and it makes sense to me that the camp director should have a flashlight like that.
I agree.
To beat off raccoons, you know, all of those things.
The nice thing about the metal body, too, is it makes a good hammer when you need.
Yeah, and there's a spare bolt in the bottom of the screw-off on the other side of it.
Yep. No, good pick, Adam. Joe, what's your pick?
My pick of the week is Delivering Happiness, which is a... So Jen Selke tweeted about something, oh, how many months ago was that? Like a month and a half ago, about how to get a free book. And so I did whatever I had to do and then sort of forgot about it. And last week, oddly enough, there's a package from Amazon in my mailbox, and it's the book Delivering Happiness, which is the story of Zappos. And, well, not so much the story of Zappos, but the story of the founder of Zappos. And it is a really great read. My wife, who's a vice principal, is reading it now as well. And just the lessons you can learn about culture and making it, it's funny, it ties right in with our discussion today and how to make people buy in to get them to really see what the company is and what camp is and how they can be a part of that. And it's bigger than just selling something. It's funny, Zappos has this saying that I've known for years, which is, Zappos is a customer service company that just happens to sell shoes and purses. So with that theory, you could do anything with that kind of company culture. So it's a great book. Easy read.
Yeah, I did the same thing, Joe, and I finished it too. It's a great read.
And we have a copy at our house, but I haven't cracked it yet. So I'm excited to get a chance to read it. So you've made it all the way through, Joe. I think the Canadian ones came out a bit later than the U.S. ones did.
I never said I made it all the way through yet.
Okay.
It's hard to share a book with your loved one when they think you're the slow reader and they're the fast reader, and then they make you make you feel guilty that you actually take time to try and understand it. And I tell you. And I know my wife doesn't listen to these podcasts, so she's a bully. She's a book bully. That's what she is. She's a book bully.
Sounds like an iPad intervention is needed.
Oh, see, that would be a good solution. Beth, what's your pick of the week?
Well, I think we all probably know what boom whackers are, but for people who don't, they're really sort of long, colorful tubes that produce various tones. So they're sort of lightweight and hollow and color-coded plastic, and they're tuned to musical pitches by length. And it's a great way for kids to get involved in making music, especially kids who either have never had an opportunity to or haven't or have felt that they don't have any musical skill. And you can get large sets of them, do them with a cabin group or the whole camp. They're virtually indestructible, so it's a nice way to sort of introduce music or another element of music into your camp. So my pick of the week is a website where I have found the lowest price for them. It's called musiciansfriend.com, and the sets start at $11.95. They ship anywhere in Canada and the U.S., and there's free shipping for orders over $99.
Cool. Adam, do you use boom whackers?
Yeah, I have sets of boom whackers, and they are. They're very practical and a great way to use low-level entry music making. They're fun. Mm-hmm. Fun. And the price, it's worth the name alone just to be able to say the word boom whacker. It's fun. It's a fun instrument. I endorse them.
Awesome. So official Path to Rhythm endorsement.
Yeah, sure.
For boom whackers. Right on. My pick is also very practical. One of my missions at camp was always to lighten the environmental footprint of stuff that we did. And that was just sort of changes that took place over the years. But I think one of the things that was most practical and certainly that I felt good about in terms of it reduced some stress of my own is over a couple of years, I had all of the non-safety critical light switches. So no outside safety lights, but interior lights like in a cabin that got left on all the time or the laundry room that the lights got left on all the time. I had them switched to timers. And depending on the purpose of the room would depend on the purpose of or the length of time on the timer. So you get half an hour or an hour timers. So even our dining hall has five banks of lights in it, and they're all on timers. So at the beginning of the meal, someone would go in and switch them, turn them all the way to an hour, and you know that it's time to start wrapping up things in the dining hall when the lights start to click off as you get to 60 minutes. But there are a few places that I didn't think I'd need to put in lights, but I'd often go out at curfew and just walk around and just make sure everything was quiet and would be constantly frustrated by the lights that people just walked away and left on. So there's places that didn't get it the first round that definitely got it the second round. So all of the staff offices have timers except for the office that was ours, because we managed to turn our lights off. And the staff lounge got them, and things like the laundry room. That was sort of the second round of timers. But I don't know what the actual impact was on our hydro bill, our electricity bill, but felt better to me and relieved my stress to be able to go around at night and see that everything was dark except for the outside lights that were supposed to be on. That is my pick of the week.
Now, Travis.
Kojo.
Travis, did you use the twist timers?
Yes.
Like, I've slept in a cabin at Cairn and the clicking. And did you ever get to digital timers, or was that?
No, for two reasons. One was I wasn't too sure if they were durable enough for an industrial setting. And two was the expense. You know, I could spend a couple $100 and buy dozens of the physical turn ones. And it just wasn't that, you couldn't buy that much with the same amount of money for digital.
Okay.
So do you mean sensor, Joe, or digital timer?
A bit of both.
Yeah.
Like I've installed a digital timer on our outside lights at our house. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, I could only find one that had, you know, like 5, 10, 15, and 30 minutes,
right.
But it still had an on and off switch in the middle. The motion sensor lights for bathrooms and whatnot, I've always wondered about, you know, if it's in the wrong place, you know, if someone's taking a long shower and the lights go out, or if someone's sitting on a toilet for a long time and the lights go out, you know, that's just rude.
We didn't ever put them in bathrooms for just that reason. But there were more and more places like pantries and things that sort of got added over time. I would walk around and see the lights left on at 12:30 at night and think, yep, got to put a timer on there. Listen, I really want to say thank you to everybody for joining us on the podcast today. Thanks, Joe, for your regular appearance and for changing your plans to be available today. We're really grateful.
It's all good. The movie will still be on tomorrow.
What are you going to see?
I might go and see Jonah Hex. I tend to choose movies that I know my wife wouldn't want to see.
Yes.
And it's just it's important for all camp staff to take time to themselves to not be at camp when they can. So
So you're not going with your wife?
I am not going with my wife.
Gotcha. And
she's never going to hear this podcast, so there you go.
Awesome. So, Beth, it's great to have you on, too.
My pleasure.
Mm-hmm. And Adam, it's great. I'm so glad that we get you into the main broadcast of the podcast. It's so nice to have you.
Yeah, you're welcome, and thank you for having me.
No worries. I wonder if you would each just take a minute and let us know where people can find out more about you online. Joe, how about you start?
I work at Pierce Williams Christian Center. You can find us at campisbetter.com. I Twitter at YoYoJoeR. And I blog at yoyojoe.com. So you can read, you can find me all those places.
Beth?
I think the simplest place to find me is just at our consulting website, and that is at walkingmaverick.com.
Adam, how about you?
You can find me at my website, www.pathtorhythm.com. It's PATHTORHYTHM. .com, and I blog there as well, and you can find articles about drumming, and I have an upcoming ebook on how to start a drumming program at your camp, and I also tweet at Path to Rhythm.
Awesome. When's your ebook coming out?
I'm hoping in the fall.
Cool. Well, that sounds awesome. Make sure you poke me about that, and I'll do what I can to help spread the word on that.
Great.
You can find me online. I blog at ourkids.net/blog and also at the Camp Nation blog at campnation.ca. On Twitter, Twitter professionally at ourkidsnet. And my personal Twitter is twitter.com/Zoic. So invite everyone to become a friend and a follower there. Love the conversation that happens. The summer camp conversation is great. So if you're sort of new to Twitter or considering Twitter and want to see what conversation is going on in the summer camp business, if you follow the hashtag #SummerCamp, all one word, pound is the number sign, and then summer camp, all of those three elements smushed together. If you search for that on search.twitter.com, you'll see all the conversation that's going on about camp, and there are some great professionals with some really neat discussion going on there. I want to say a couple quick things before we say goodbye. First of all, I want to offer congratulations to Spencer Blake from our old camp, from Cairn. Spencer won the music video contest that we hosted at facebook.com/ourkidsgotocamp. And the top 20 videos were chosen and went to professional singer-songwriters from Canada, Tom Barlow and Peter Katz. Peter, we've certainly talked about before in the podcast. And they picked Spencer as the best sort of performance and video that he submitted to the contest. So our congratulations to Spencer, and our thanks to Sheba for giving us some pretty cool prizes. We were able to give Spencer a laptop for recording music and a USB mic, and those who came in second, third, and fourth got Toshiba mini DVD player, so that was pretty great. One of the other things I want to mention just quickly, if you do go to facebook.com/ourkidsgotocamp and invite your staff, etc., to join us there, become a fan, for every 1,000 fans who like Our Kids Go to Camp, that we will be sending a kid to camp this summer, and we're sort of getting tight on time, so I really want to get, if you could help us spread the word to your staff at camp, since I'm sure they'll be there by the time you're listening to this, if you have a Northern Hemisphere camp, and your alumni, etc., we would love to be sending as many kids to camp as we can. We are taking questions. We're going to start taking questions. We're still waiting for some to come in on all of the Camp Nation hosts and all the guests that we've had too, if it fits their area of expertise. We'll take questions on FormSpring. So if you go to formspring.me/campnation, there's an easy way to send us a message, and then our answers get Twittered out so that we can sort of spread that as a camp-wide FAQ. I think it has the potential to have some good impact and get spread around. I want to take a minute to also thank Donovan Romanek from whereitsatproductions.ca, who is, as we say, our long-suffering audio editor, and he'll have some extra work to do today because we lost Joe mid-question. So thanks, Don, for everything that you've done for the Camp Nation podcast. And I also want to say thank you again to our guests. I'm so glad that you're able to meet up with me and all of us on Skype today. And to our listeners, I just want to say we really appreciate the time that you take to download the podcast, to listen to it on the website. And if you just take a second and go to iTunes, you can give us a little review. That's really helpful. There's an interesting discussion going on Camp Nation 8, I think, which is the one about families. We had a listener email a question in, and Joe and Dan and I and Gab answered it via email, and just wanted to push that out to more public. I sort of anonymized the question, but there's a good discussion from a camp person who's wondering how to help integrate their non-camp person spouse into his camp life. So if you go to find Camp Nation number 8, you'll see that there. I just want to say thank you to the four of you for joining me. Thanks for the evening, friends.
This Camp Nation podcast was brought to you by Our Kids Go to Camp magazine and the camps.ca online summer camp directory. Thanks for listening.